Today my guest is Brian Lewis. Brian, how are you?
I'm good, David. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being on my show. Finally, we've had recorded so much together, but not actually technology and friends.
I'm glad to finally make it to the show.
I didn't know that.
I thought it wasn't a friend.
Well, it's technology and friends.
Oh, okay. Now I understand.
I'll leave it to the audience to guess what you are. Of course you're a friend. You know how some people really like to go to the movies to be scared? They like to go to the scary movies and do that. I'm like that way with technology. And that's why I have you on the show, because we were talking earlier about how technology should terrify us. So we should probably be a little bit more terrified of the stuff that's out there, right?
We shouldn't be terrified of technology. We should be terrified of the people that do stuff with technology and what they can do to us.
That's what the show is about. This is Brian Lewis on how the people are terrifying us with technology.
Excellent.
It's really a security show.
Perfect.
Give me some examples. I know you're talking about this a lot.
I'll just give you a background a little bit. When I was really little, kind of little, I was high school time frame. I found a book called Secrets of the Super Hacker by the Nightmare.
Nightmare.
Yeah. And so you can still find the book these days. It's a old paperback. Read a large one. But he went through all these different techniques. And the funny thing is this was back. It had to be back either late 80s, early 90s. But everything he talked about is stuff people do today, from social engineering to all the different type of attacks. He didn't talk about what they did back then from, you flip this bit here or you do this. He talked about the grand ideas of it. And I was shocked. I was shocked at how easy it was. I was shocked that his list of passwords had my password in it. And I thought my password was so good. I did stuff with a Julian date. Who uses Julian dates, right? And so it was shocking. And it's shocking today how bad, computer security is.
So that tells me that it really isn't a technology problem, because the technology's evolved a lot since you read this book years ago, and yet these hacks are still happening and people are still victims of them.
And part of it is technology, right? We're improving technology greatly.
Right.
And when we finally get it completely solid and there's no flaws in it, it's 100% secure, we'll still have hackers breaking in.
Because we're involved.
Because we're involved.
Human beings involved.
Right. I mean, if you look at the last few ones of government disclosure stuff, a kid, they haven't caught him yet, but they believe it's a 16-year-old kid who's broken into and gotten government records, who broke into the AOL account of one of our top people in the government. Hmm. You know, they call and they say, hey, this is me. Can you reset my password for me? let me ask you a hard question. Like, what's your birthday? Or what's some other information about you I can find on the internet?
Mother's maiden name, right. I'm actually finding really troubling. There's a high government official that has an AOL account?
Yeah, well, that's the other scary thing. I think it was part of the NSA. I can't remember off the top of my head. But, who has AOL accounts anymore? Sorry, AOL. But anyway, are we allowed to do that?
To dis AOL?
To dis AOL?
Are they even really a separate entity? Aren't they part of somebody else now?
Maybe. I didn't mean to dis them, except that, if you got a resume.
I have a yahoo.com email.
Update your email address.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the split threats. What should we be on the lookout for?
Well, one of the things that I see most people make the mistake of is Wi-Fi.
Uh-huh.
You go into Starbucks and you do stuff.
Yeah,
and
it's
you
great
log in.
Because it's so convenient.
It's awesomely
convenient.
In fact,
if I was there like yesterday, today I might not even have to log in. I just open up my laptop. And
look at that, and you're fully connected, you think, to Starbucks. But you have no idea where you're connected to or what they're doing. And that's the thing is most companies even, there's only one way to configure secure Wi-Fi. Mm. We do it at Microsoft. Mm. I've met a few other companies that do it. And what you do is you buy a very expensive access point that lets you put a certificate on the access point. And then you spend all the time and effort to get the certificate, another certificate, installed to your laptop.
Okay, so only specific laptops are actually allowed to connect to Microsoft networks.
Right, and then so basically what happens is the laptop authenticates to the access point, so the access point knows that they're allowed to do it.
Right.
But the other thing is the computer is authenticating the access point to make sure it's really the access point that it thinks it is.
Right.
Because one of the really neat tools that is used out there is a Wi-Fi pineapple. Hmm. You can go buy it off of hack5.org or com or something.
It's a piece of hardware.
You set it up, and you can say, you know, just go into a Microsoft office and say, I'm the Microsoft network for customers. Hmm. We already have when we have a Microsoft guest. Sometimes we have Microsoft open.
Okay.
Call this one Microsoft free.
Sure. Yeah, or it doesn't have to be Microsoft. It could be the airport.
Or it could be the airport, free, or you could
free
say
free airport access or free Starbucks access.
Let's pick on O'Hare.
Right.
O'Hare doesn't give free Wi-Fi, but let's say you bring an access point there, like this pineapple, and say,
name it ORG_free.
Yep.
Yep.
And then people connect up to it,
sure.
And they start to browse, and they're like, "Hey, great! This is awesome! I get free access to internet." And what's happening is they're doing a man-in-the-middle attack. Anything that's not through VPN is subject to having problems. I mean, you could say, "Well, I'm doing HTTPS, so I should be okay." You might be, you might not be, because you can terminate that and then recreate it and pass it through. Mm. Now, generally, you should get a error that it's not a trusted certificate.
Right.
But a lot of us click right through that anyway.
Sure.
So, I mean, there's a lot of things that they can do to us and that we have to be careful of with Wi-Fi. Mm. Like I said, there's only that one way to set up a secure Wi-Fi. So if you're going to use a Starbucks or whatever, what do you do? Use a VPN, and not just the VPN like we've implemented at Microsoft now, where we do what's called split tunnel, which means any web browsing I do goes straight to the internet, and only the stuff I do that hits the intranet at Microsoft mm-hmm. goes through the VPN. That won't protect you in a generic open environment,
right?
Because everybody will see your open traffic still.
Mm-hmm.
You got to route everything through the VPN to be protected.
I see. You were showing some tools that hackers have that are available for, gosh, under $100 sometimes. Pieces of hardware, free pieces of software. Tell me about some of those.
Well, so we were just talking about the Wi-Fi Pineapple, which
yep.
is one. And it's basically, it not only can you put up as an access point and then watch all the traffic as it goes through, or even use the Beef toolkit. There's a...
Beef?
I think it's an organ beef.org. It's not beef.org, but it's a browser injection exploitation framework.
Okay.
And it's an open source thing that basically when you hook somebody's web browser, it basically lets you do all kinds of nasty things to their machine and check what kind of vulnerabilities they have. And you can even take it over so that you're permanent there as opposed to only able to do stuff to their machine while they have that browser window open.
Oh.
But you can redirect their links, and you can do all kinds of stuff. It's used often in conjunction with a Wi-Fi Pineapple.
Oh, so maybe display a login screen that's on your site, so they can
capture that. You can do automatic things too, and you can change their links as they pass through. You can say any link that goes to them, don't send them the link to Microsoft.com. Change the link. You know, show it on their page that it says Microsoft.com, but change the link underneath to go to hackme.com.
Okay. Now they're downloading files. They're downloading Windows updates from hackme.com. Or...
Yeah. So Windows updates has a little bit more of a security mechanism behind
it. But if I download a copy of Microsoft Office to install.
Right. If you download Office to install it, it may be a copy of Office with my added tool set to
my
it.
My added tool set, yeah, that tracks your everything you're doing and sends it off to some nefarious person.
Yeah, there's another box that I thought was kind of neat that's called the Wi-Fi Robin. It's sold on the internet for like about $100, and it's positioned as buy this little box and get free internet. So how do I buy a little box that I turn it on and then it's my access point? I connect up to Brian's access point, and all of a sudden it gets free internet. Well, it gets free internet by connecting to your neighbors.
Oh,
and basically it takes minutes or seconds to crack into your WAP encryption keys, and then your WPA encryption keys. It takes hours to days, but it will automatically find all the networks in your neighborhood and crack all of them, and then basically you'll connect to it. It will hop and use all your neighbor's internet connections.
Interesting.
All
right, so that's...
doesn't take a hacker to use.
Doesn't take a hacker to use.
You plug it in, and it works.
So basically you're kind of stealing bandwidth from them.
Yes.
It's probably, on the scale of damage... If I'm using the internet at the same time as my neighbor is stealing from it, then I'm paying a little bit of a price for that. But
right, but it's not something like I've taken your bank account empty.
Exactly right.
Which many of the other tools, that's what they're looking
for. Let's talk about some of the evil stuff that's out there.
Some of the evil stuff. Well, one of the things is just passwords in general.
Yeah.
people use the same password, I'm sure none of you do, on multiple sites.
Yeah. The word password. But I changed the A to an at sign. So it's,
oh, well, then you're good.
I'm safe.
Yeah. You know, you might want to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 instead. That's what everybody else is doing these days.
That's my hash.
So one of the things that if you reuse, you know, you think of a really good hard password to do.
Okay.
And then you memorize that one, and then you use it everywhere.
Right.
And then what happens is the hacker breaks into a site. That password list gets taken, mm-hmm. and people basically, they sell it. There was a password list of, it was a little over 3 million email names and passwords. It was for sale on the internet in the dark web, right, on a Tor network, for over $2,000 for a list of 3,000 username and password combinations.
All right.
There's only one reason people continually keep buying that thing, different people, right, spend that kind of money on it, and that's because they're able to use it to at least steal at least the $2,000 plus some.
Sure, because even if that password came from, let's say, my email account, there's a good chance I might have used that for my credit card account or my bank account or my Amazon shopping account.
This password list was actually from a web hosting site, a free web hosting site, so for free web pages.
So stealing that information isn't valuable, but if I'm reusing that password, now I've got access to everything.
So now I basically set that password thing up in a script that goes and tries the username and password combination on all the bank's websites that I know about.
Right.
And then, boom, I get in. And then I transfer money to other accounts, and then I, you know, in a foreign country, empty it. Mm-hmm. Or I use it to order products, right? Because there's products using PayPal or whatever, you can do bank account things. And, you know, I buy stuff in the U.S., and a lot of U.S. companies won't ship overseas. But there's some nice companies that have a service for you. You ship to them, they repackage it and ship it overseas for you.
Mm.
And it's a legitimate business.
Right.
But 80% of the business they do is illegitimate business.
Okay.
So you're able to basically get your and steal money. And so that's hugely problematic, especially when you start to jump not only state lines, but country lines. It becomes very hard to enforce.
Right. There were some hardware devices. One I found interesting was the one that looks like a keyboard. Apparently, there's a my computer trusts all keyboards, right?
Right. Well, so there's a really neat product.
I guess the idea is that if I'm sitting, if it knows that if I'm sitting down and typing, then either I'm trusted or I've already breached every other security, so I've probably been vetted.
If you're sitting at the machine typing and the password's entered already, right?
Yeah.
Firewalls, you're already past that.
Okay.
Antivirus, you're the guy typing. It's probably good, right? They're not thinking you're the virus. And so if you get into a keyboard and can type, you probably can do pretty much anything to that machine.
Right.
I mean, you may be a reduced user. Hopefully you're not running as a full-blown administrator. But even then, you can do a lot.
Right.
And so there's a product called USB Rubber Ducky.
Rubber Ducky. I like this.
From Hack 5, again, just like the Wi-Fi Pineapple. What it is, it looks like a USB stick, but it's got replaceable memory cards. These the micro SD memory cards.
Okay.
And you put that in there with commands, and basically when you plug it into a machine, it adds itself as a keyboard.
Hmm. The machine thinks that you're plugging in a keyboard.
Right, because that's what it says. It says, I'm a keyboard.
Okay.
And then that keyboard is just this little computer that just types all of the messages that you've sent to it. So, for example, you could type in cmd/enter, or, you know, enter, and then that starts a command prompt.
Right.
Well, if I'm sitting at the machine, I would see that command prompt pop up.
Hmm.
Ah, but there's other commands I can type, and I can start like a script, and basically I can run a script that uses Windows scripting that makes that command prompt invisible and hides it.
Right.
So I would probably first type in that command, you know, start Notepad, type in that script, save that to the hard drive, start the command prompt, run the script and hide that prompt, and so you'd have a fraction of a second to see that command prompt at Notepad and then the command prompt pop up on your screen. So it might go flip, flip, and then it's gone.
Hmm.
And then the rest of the stuff it does, you won't see. But it can write a whole program and compile it and execute it. It can go open up a connection to the internet and pull code down and then execute it.
Hmm.
It can do anything that you can do while you sit in front of a machine.
Wow.
So as you sit talking to your banker next time and they're at their machine in front of you, you're behind their desk, but the back of their machine is right there where you could just take that and plug it right in. You could basically own their machine.
So devices like this, I think we can protect ourselves by just keeping our machines secure. You know, don't walk away from unattended. Put it, if it's a server, put it in a locked room and things like that. But some of the stuff, you know, we're out in the wild. We're carrying our machines around. Like, how do we as users protect ourselves? Especially those of us that aren't real technical.
Well, from some of this stuff, you know, getting infected with a USB stick or rubber ducky or that kind of stuff, you know, there's people that epoxy their ports shut.
That seems extreme.
That is extreme. I don't think I would do that. You know, keeping track of your machine and not letting it out of sight is one way.
Yeah. I think, actually, you bring up a good point. So that the reason I wouldn't epoxy my USB port is because that's a useful thing. I use that for things. Yep. And the same reason I could never connect to Wi-Fi or never connect to Starbucks Wi-Fi, but it's so convenient. I'm trading off convenience for security all the time.
Oh, one of my favorite with the USB stick on security is, if you find a USB stick on the floor, what are you going
to
do with it?
I'll put it in and to see what's in it. There might be something free.
You know what?
And then maybe I'll rebuild my machine.
It's so hard to say, all right, I'm just going to throw that out. That might be a good USB stick. I'll put it in and clean it off and use it, right? And delete whatever's on
there. That's safe. Is that safe? No. If I just plug it in, delete all the files, and now I've got a USB stick?
So you plug it in.
Okay.
The files on there, then own your machine, right?
But there are no files.
And then you go delete them.
Oh,
and there's other things that people have been doing with thumbsticks lately, not just the rubber ducky where you're entering keyboard commands, but the firmware on the USB stick is outside of the files on there. And so now it was theoretical, and now people have actually done it, where you basically change that firmware on there. You plug it in, that firmware talks to the OS to say how it works.
Oh.
Well, you can infect the machine from that.
Oh, I see.
And there's no API, there's no antivirus to protect you from that.
Even formatted wouldn't change the firmware.
No, even formatted doesn't change the firmware.
Yeah.
And so firmware pieces are becoming an interesting problem. Now, there was a problem on Apple machines where if you plug stuff in, it was a firmware infection, and it would, I think it was a FireWire port, it would basically infect the motherboard, which,
oh, wow.
When you get to this type of an infection, you can't just format the hard drive and clean it like we usually do, right? The way to fix this is to either reflash the firmware if you can, or if that doesn't work, you have to replace the motherboard.
Oh, my gosh.
That's extreme. Pretty ugly.
All right, so back to now, we can be diligent, we can keep track of our machine and not let it out of our sight, but that's not enough. I mean, we cannot do foolish things like plugging in USB drives. What else can we do? How can we protect ourselves?
Stop downloading WAIRS programs, you know, downloading.
All right.
When you go to download, there's some really neat packages out there to inject your executable.
Okay.
So basically I can take the Office install, copy it off of my CD, and then I can take that setup.exe program and I can point it towards a wizard. I said next. Not only does setup there, it adds my files to the setup. And so when you run setup, it looks normally. It installs Windows Office, like Microsoft Office, like it normally would.
Okay.
But it also installs my remote exploit kit as well at the same time. It's really easy to do. So when you think about going on to download a torrent of Office or any other package, for example, there's a good chance you're getting malware with it because it's so easy to build, and they have more interest in putting things that you want out there to download and run than just normal people who go, yeah, I might as well give to the community and give them my version of, you know, Photoshop that I've paid for.
Right.
And so it's more often than not filled with malware.
I see. All right, any final thoughts? I think we've terrified our viewers plenty.
How do you fix it? Well, you run stuff that's only legitimate.
Yeah.
And then you don't leave your machine out of your sight. And when you connect up to Wi-Fi, you can look stuff up, but don't log into anything unless you go through and do a secure connection first to a VPN connection.
Okay.
Those are the ways to protect yourself.
And you're blogging about this stuff as well.
I am blogging about this stuff.
Where's that?
My thoughts on IT.com.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm writing blog posts on how to set things up to protect from it and that kind of stuff. And So hopefully if I scared you, I'll scare you enough to go visit my blog and...
Yeah, and then you'll be scared some more.
Learn how to fix it.
Then learn how to fix yourself. It. All right, I like the sound of that. Brian, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me in, David. Friend or tech?
Friend.
Thanks.
This was David Giard's Technology and Friends.